Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Provincial State of Mind. Myself, Owen Harrison, Jeff Neville and Tom Savage. This is a podcast focused on all four Irish provincial sides in both URC and European competitions. We discuss what happened the previous weekend, what we can expect from each province in our upcoming games, as well as any major off-field news. So, gents, how was your week? Kick off with you, Jeff. What have you been up to?
I've just been busy. I'm very busy. There's not enough hours in the day, to be honest with you. And even this podcast tonight now, I'm a bit like, no offense to either of you, because I don't mean it in that way, but like, I'm just kind of like, could do without this now.
thing is, I was thinking of trauma headed it there earlier as well today, and I was just like, no, I got to do it.
Yeah. I'm just like, fuck, I'm up the walls. Like, so I'm just kind of, I was just kind of like, okay, an hour and a half now of this podcast, could genuinely do without it this week, but I suppose because of the Grand Slam, and this is what gets me as well, because
we'll just cut the Leinster section and the Connacht section, it'll be fine.
Yeah, well, what I was thinking was, like, because we're so late in the day recording this, like, it goes out on a Thursday, does anyone really still want to hear what we have to talk about that Grand Slam? Like, so much has been written about and spoken about that it's kind of like, yeah, it's done. Like, do you know that scene in The Simpsons when they do the B sharps? And at the end, your man rolls up in the car and he's like, ah, it's been done. And just drives on again.
It's I don't know. Like, I think the weekend, but like, where did you watch the slam?
At home.
At home. I was the same. What about you on? Yeah.
I'm exactly the same. Watched it at home.
In your mansion.
In the mansion, yeah. Oh, God, no. I went into the servants' quarters. Pretend.
Keeping it real.
Yeah.
I was sat at home with my little girl watching the game because my partner went in. She went off doing a bit of shopping. So it was just like, do you know what? No problem. I forgot I had a radio segment at halftime that I had to do with Liam McLeod 95. So I didn't really realize this until around 10 minutes before the halftime. So I was just like, how am I going to work this? Because this baby is awake and she's going to be staying awake for the foreseeable. So I was just like, and like, this wasn't a pre-record, because typically, you know, because you can have two things. You can have either live or pre-record. Pre-record is fine. If you mess up, you can just go again. This was going to be live. So I was just like, right, we have a very exciting problem going on here. So I was just like, I'm not going to tell them, right? I'm just going to say, before we go live, the baby is here. If she kicks off, I'm sorry. There's nothing I can do. So halftime's coming up and I'm starting to get nervous here. And I'm hoping that it doesn't translate into my little girl, because she's 6 weeks old. So she has no concept of being on the radio. So I sat her down on my lap. The phone rings, the 061 number. I answer, put it on speakerphone. And I managed to get through the entire segment without the daughter so much as squeaking. And I was just like, this is fucking exhilarating. It was like doing it with a sort of a metaphorical gun to my head. It was like, just, I can't talk too loud or she'll start getting excited and she'll start making noise or maybe starting to cry. It was just like, it was like I was gambling with the audio quality of the radio broadcast that I was on. But she was very good. She was a very good girl and didn't kick off at all, not even a small bit. So I got my radio segment done and Ireland won the slam. It was very good.
I gambled 2 years ago and I lost. I lost horribly. So I was doing a live after a Six Nations game, whatever it was. And it wasn't my live again, so it was just a live. But we were having beef for dinner. And at the time, my son was only, well, I don't know, 3-4 months old. So I decided, because I had maybe 10-15 minutes between full time and the live, that I would sear the beef so I could put it on for dinner. And that would kind of fill the time. Otherwise, it was just dead time. In my haste to seal the beef, I set off every fire alarm in the house. He's screaming. I'm trying to get dinner ready. Look at the clock. Okay, that's 15 minutes. So about 2 minutes before going on live, I've every fire alarm in the house gone off. Kitchen's full of smoke. And I've a 3-month, 4-month old absolutely screaming his lungs out at the same time. Couldn't have lost worse. Don't know what I was thinking.
It's the thrill of it, though.
Yeah.
What have you gotten away with it?
I felt so alive.
What have you gotten away with it?
I've not felt like that since.
I'm on the radio this Saturday for the Glasgow game. I might fucking try and sneak her in. See if I can get away with her with a live mic.
Oh, God. Give her a mic.
Give her a mic. Yeah, just have her, just cut to the daughter and just she's just like roaring her head off because she just wants a bottle. I'm just like, wait till halftime.
She wouldn't be able to have any of the jellies yet, would she?
No jellies. We got a bottle. I'll just give one to the fella I'm broadcasting with as well. I'm not sure who it is. Just like, here, look, I brought a bottle for you as well.
BYOB.
What did you do, on?
Well, I spent, St. Patrick's Day in the rain, watching a parade. Good. Freezing cold, soaking wet, watching what I believe was the same sort of four floats and sort of things marched by. They just ducked behind a sort of down one of the alleyways and back around to do another loop. It was the same guy. A guy playing a drum, a guy dressed up as a medieval sort of warrior, someone from a foreign culture, various different ones. They changed outfits as they came around, and some sort of vintage car. And that was pretty much it for the entire festival.
Parade. You sure you weren't on a roundabout?
No, definitely wasn't on a roundabout. And a roundabout would have been more interesting.
It was just going around you. Owen was on a carousel in the fun field.
Just like
there was a spider baby.
The standard of this float is shocking.
Yes, that was the excitement.
Will we talk about this rugby and get this podcast over with?
Yes, let's get this podcast finished. Let's jump into it. Let's get stuck in to this podcast with relish.
So looking forward to this.
Yeah, are you ready are you ready to luxuriate?
Highlight of my week.
Right, well, look, we'll talk then about the Grand Slam. We'll start with the Ireland game. They won 29-16 against England.
I've actually turned off my notifications on TweetDeck, so I don't see you anybody. Like, I basically am just tweeting into the void. I don't really see much on Twitter these days. What was your thoughts on the red card?
I thought it was justified. I could see the once Jakob Piper engaged the framework, I could see where it was going on it.
I personally would have gone. I would have been happy enough with the yellow card. If it was watching him,
I'm the same. I could see I could see it being downgraded from a red to a yellow, but I can also see how he stayed with the red. To me, I think if Stewart had stayed square on, if he hadn't turned sideways, if he had stayed square on, I think that's just a rugby incident and you play on.
Yeah. I get what he was trying to do. I think he was trying to make himself as small as possible so he wouldn't just run in head first or hit him with his knee or some other shit like that.
He's trying to protect himself more than anything.
Yeah, he's trying to go to the side. I get it. I thought it was harsh at the time. And I've been vindicated.
No, I fully agree with that. And I said it was harsh at the time. If it was a yellow, I would have been like, fair enough. It was a red because of what was said or through the framework. Fair enough. Like, you can't really argue. Like, I think when he said there's no mitigation, as soon as he said that, I was like, that's that.
Yeah.
Like, adios, buddy. But
when I heard the no mitigation part after, because I wasn't able to listen to this with the sound on, like, when I heard about the no mitigation afterwards, it was just like, well, like, there kind of was a bit of mitigation there.
I felt the same, yeah. But, I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's done now. But, like, that was one of the... That was a big talking point after the game. But what was your feel? What did you feel after Ireland won the Grand Slam? What was your feeling? Like, how did you feel?
Well, in terms of the game, I was feeling a bit of deja vu because, to me, that was very similar to last year's game against England.
Actually,
scrum struggles a little bit and Ireland eventually get a late...
Ireland pull away in the last 20 minutes.
This is deja vu.
The actual slam itself, I felt just really good about it, you know? Like, it was nice to see them not bottle it like, not that they, not that that's a problem with this Irish team anyway, but like, as in, I think given how well they'd played over the last year, I think that, you know, with the you know, the win over France as well, I think that it was really good to see that. It felt good. It was a feel good moment to see Ireland win it like that.
Richly deserved.
Oh, yeah.
Very
yeah.
much richly deserved. And it was a moment where, and I think they're very few and far between in sport, where you see a team get their reward and like they're just dessert for what they've done. The Henshaw score, as soon as he scored that, which Aki was unbelievable.
Great, really good.
I was very much like, that's it.
Like, yeah.
That's a bit of daylight now. That's 8 points. That's it. That's the one. And then, you know, the rest of the scores kind of came. So that third quarter was a nervy enough time. I felt England did very well. And I know their attack was a bit blunt, etc. But I think people have to realize that, A, Ireland only conceded 10 tries in 2 Six Nations, which is phenomenal. Like, France could do that to you in 2 games, like, alone. And then attack just takes that small bit more time, I think, to embed than a defense. England did what they needed to do, and that was make it just an absolute dogfight of a game. And they went out and they very, very much did that for an hour, and they stayed in it. And I mean, like, people can give out about England's defense or about their attack, etc., but there was only a point in it up to what, 61 minutes.
Yeah.
There was only a point in it. Like, they did exactly what they needed to do for an hour. And unfortunately for them, a red card obviously didn't help, but Ireland just pulled off. And, you know, that was it. They ended up winning the game. I felt Ireland were well deserving of their win, but I think England did very, very well for a huge chunk of that game with 14 players as well.
Like, I think what England had to do coming into this game was pull their game way back. Like, they played a little bit too much rugby against France and made a few errors as well, but they pulled their game way back. They upped their kicking volume, upped their kicking distance. And like, I thought they handled Ireland very, very well. They didn't give Ireland the sort of opportunities that Ireland are really good at exploiting. They prevented Ireland from getting those, like that foothold into the game. The defense was pretty good. Like, they won a few turnovers. They had to compete at the breakdown. They gave away a few penalties that way. But I just think that they can take a lot from that game with how well they defended and how they managed the kicking game. Because I think that was the big, talking point for me was how England managed that aspect of the kicking game. And even in the third quarter, when they were down to 14 men, they actually handled it really well then too. So like, there's lots for them to take. I think lots for South Africa to take as well, about how elements of a stripped back game like that can work against Ireland and certainly prevent Ireland from playing with a whole ton of momentum. Now Ireland broke through, but again, you look at it, kick into the backfield, a handy enough bounce. These are the small margins that these games kind of turn on. And I think that, like, the manner of the toughness of the game, I felt enhanced it for me, that Ireland didn't have a bit of a stroll, you know, against an England team who were in a bad place coming into it. I think they would have learned a lot about themselves against Scotland and again this week against England, certainly with the World Cup coming up.
It's funny the way you said a handy bounce there, because it led up to Henshaw's try, but you could look at Hansen's tackle and be like, that's high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you could look at the scrum as well that preceded.
Well, it was a penalty.
Carry.
It was a penalty.
Do you know what I mean? And like, the fact it wasn't called. So you're just kind of like, yeah, Ireland pulled away after an hour, but there was two moments there that England could feel very aggrieved and be like, I mean, what do you want us to do here? Like, as in, that's a high shot, that's a scrum pen, and we've conceded 7 as a result, like, you know?
And like you said there, Jeff, once that try went in, I didn't think England would have the firepower to come back from that far down.
No.
I thought, like, Ireland have this one. Now, as long as there's not some massive error to let them back in. But yeah, it was a really interesting one. Like, I think with regards to kick pressure, how that works against Ireland and how England showed how it could work. And if you need, like, again, look, you need a few things to go in your favor, of course. But yeah, it was an interesting game as a case study for later in the year, I think, for the likes of the Springboks. But how Ireland stuck in there and, you know, I think dogged it out when they needed to, because like, there was a period there that 5 minutes before the try, maybe 10 minutes before, Ireland were looking ropey. energy was gone, crowd were down. Like, that could have got out of hand very easy.
There was a moment, the start of the game, that still sticks in my head. Do you know when Sexton took the tap and go? It was a bit like, whoa, what?
Yeah, it's like, what are you what are you doing there, boy?
Was it 3-0 or 6-0? But what got me was like the 5-meter, obviously the 5-meter tap and go is that Ireland enjoy, etc. But like around 50% of their tries are scored from the line out too.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of like, or just make it whatever, 3-3 or 6-3, whatever. I can't remember if England were 6 or 3 at the time. But I just felt the tap and go was like, okay, that's very strange.
It just seemed a bit rash
for
Sexton, yeah. You know?
So that stuck in my craw for a little bit. Really burnt my biscuits.
How are you thinking about the scrum, Owen? Because I remember there was a few of those in the second half where it was kind of looking like that thing where the scrum is not important until it is.
Well, look, that's it. We've said all along. We've been saying this since last year's game against Wales, I think it was, in the Six Nations. Was the first time we discussed it in depth on it. And we said that's where the weakness is. It's still there. It's, I think England were able to exploit it to a certain extent, but then couldn't in the second half, because when it was Ireland's put in, the back rows couldn't commit fully. Mm-hmm. They were meerkatting a lot to figure out what was going on. So I don't think they had the chance to double down on it. Again, it's only going to be sides. I think there's maybe three sides that can cause a significant hassle at scrum time. I think it's probably England,
France, Springboks.
And Springboks are the three sides that can do it. They're really the ones you'd expect.
I wanted to ask your opinion on this one, because James Tracy was talking on Off the Ball this week about how unfair he felt it was that Jack O'Paper during the game said to Andrew Porter, keep the elbow up now and go straight to Andrew Porter directly during the game.
He felt it was unfair it was said to him.
It was said to him during the game.
Would he rather he just blew 6 penalties against him and... Then that's said, "What's he? Why didn't he tell him?" Like, that doesn't. No, I mean, it's active. Doesn't make any sense. It's active. Yeah. It's proactive.
Why
would a referee shout something like "hands away"?
At the breakdown.
Like, that's
no. I'm like maybe I'm wrongly framing his argument here, but he felt that it kind of says, and it illustrated a bias against Porter coming into the game, like as in that. He was pointing out the things that happened to Porter in scrums that cause him problems, which is going at an angle and dropping his elbow.
He's hardly going to turn to him and say, make sure you stick those hips out now and drop that left elbow.
I can guarantee you Borthwick gave the video and put the presentation there, and when they talked to the ref before the game, this is what we want you to focus on. This is what Porter is doing. This is what's happening in the Irish scrum. We want to make sure that we get a fair contest. And that's been put out there.
I felt it was a weird enough argument, because it just felt that, like, I would prefer my prop to be told that, even if it's during the game. Because, like, look, the opposition tight head still has to fucking...
Than to be blown against it, like...
Yeah, he still has to, like, the opposition tight head still has to scrummage well. Like, he still has to do it, like, as in it's... It was just a weird one. I think that, like, it's quite well established now that, I mean, referees are aware of it. And it for a while, it cost Ireland some serious momentum in this game, but didn't cost Ireland the game. And this is something that's happened repeatedly over the last, I would say calendar year, where it's been like that, where the scrum has been an issue, but not a critical one. It looked like it would be for a while on Saturday, but I think Ireland kind of pulled away before it got a chance to become, I think with the red card too, as you were saying there, it meant that it wasn't as big a deal as maybe it could have been.
Like, you go back to the Scotland game. I think the first scrum of the day was either a free kick or a penalty against Porter again for going in. The ref called him on it early. And it's the same thing. It's Porter, and I call it the Porter paradox, because he is so vital to the Irish game plan. He is undroppable from that team. And you don't want to see either Cian Healy or Dave Kilcoyne come on for more than about 5 minutes at the end, if the game is anyway still in the mix, because Porter is so valuable. But he is also the weak link in that Irish team in terms of that scrum.
It is ridiculous. Like, the scrum is 100% an issue for him. I would think like it's, I think that's fair enough to say that it's not, that's not unfair to Andrew Porter to say that. But I would also say that he is the cornerstone of that Irish pack, the most important player in that Irish pack, arguably the entire team. And that most of what Ireland do outside of the scrum is based on a lot of what Andrew Porter does really well. And when he's playing well, Ireland are playing well, and he's genuinely a world-class player, with the exception of the scrum, which is, like you say, it's a bit of a paradox.
The minutes he's putting in is phenomenal.
Unreal.
What he goes, prop? What he goes, 70-odd after going 80 6 days previous?
And like he's not out there taking it easy.
No. He's not propping like we would prop, fellas. He's playing.
He's not ambling from set piece to set piece.
Like he's not leaning on them rocks with his arm in the air. Like he's not kind of filing out to that inside pod and just like, yeah, you know what? I'll just stand here.
Yeah. Don't worry. He's not just leaning like hands out on a rock, just going. I thought I was needed, but I'm not.
He's not buffing his stats with the fucking, like coming in there and like putting a hand on the back of the shoulder. It's just like, there we go, lads. That's a rock for you.
you push out. I've got the pillar here.
I've got it. I'm pillaring up. Don't worry about that. Or the fella coming in last with his leg extended. This still counts as an involvement.
Yeah. When you're on the defensive side.
he's just honestly, he's like how he manages it, you know, like at his side, he is just an animal. I just keep, whenever I think about Andrew Porter, he's a fucking animal. He's a beast. I can't grasp
the amount of work he gets done around the pitch, etc. But constantly it's big minutes.
You say something if he was a guy who'd give you huge output. But he was 50. A 55 minute guy,
yeah.
Or a 60 minute guy max. He can do 80 minutes.
Imagine he was South African and they were like, you're coming off after 45, 50 minutes. He'd be like, no. That's not how I work.
No. Not happening, I'm afraid. I'll be staying on for this one for the full 80.
Just waving away the tobacco. No.
And you're meant to put the fucking bib back on.
No. Your man comes on the pitch. Well, I guess we're playing with 16.
I'm not going off. But you know what?
Telling the opposition, bring someone on.
You know what? I can cover tight head. Don't worry. Send your men off there. No, he's honestly, I think he's my player of the tournament. I'm not sure if that was a segment for later on, but he's my player of the tournament from an Irish perspective because he's just so consistently outstanding. Yes, he concedes a few penalties. But honestly, I think Ireland, there's a few games that Ireland don't win if he's not playing.
I think I put up that question on Twitter there, Sunday or Monday. And let's say every answer, I said name one player. Every answer had about three first off, which is fine because I'm in the same boat. But there was maybe six players mentioned, but on rotation. Like you could ask 100 people and they'd all give you the six same players. I think Mac Hansen's probably mine. And the more I think about it, the more he dealt with everything, played every minute of the tournament. I know four players did, but I just felt he was phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And I'm using that word again. I used it nonstop.
I was just going to say you're upping the reps on the phenomenal again.
I think it's a subconscious thing now, isn't it? Like I felt he was very good, just constantly. Every game, he was excellent. So I think he's my player of the tournament. And I think that back three for Ireland.
So well balanced.
I don't know if I'd be forgiven for saying this or will someone call me out on it. But in my opinion, I think it's the best back three in the world at the moment.
I agree.
Just unbelievable.
I think for me, player of the tournament, the Irish player of the tournament was
Ryan Baird.
Ryan Baird, yes. No. Hugo Keenan for me. I think defensive solidity.
He had a bad kick in the last game. This guy, this cod, this scoffer.
Drop him. Yeah. It's funny because when he kicked that, side-footed it off. I was like, oh, that's what it looks like.
He is human.
It's one of those. Oh, he is human.
I was like, oh, the cyborg is malfunctioning. Yeah.
And someone's thumb just slipped off the joystick. That's all that happened.
one of the reasons I think he is potentially one of the players in the tournament and so important to Ireland is, as the Six Nations has gone on, we've seen less and less impact from Sexton at 10 in attacking terms. And I think he's picking up quite a bit of that as the sort of the second playmaker within the back line. And I think that's one of the reasons he's undroppable. And talk about Porter playing minutes. You know, we basically don't know who the alternative fullback is in this Ireland squad because
I genuinely think
plays every minute.
I think it's either Mac Hansen or Jimmy O'Brien.
Fabulous player.
Fabulous player. But I do think it's one of them, to be honest. I think they would come in as that next 15. I had nothing to say after that. Sorry.
No, I think they're like, you know, I think we saw, like, I think because like Jimmy O'Brien made an error off a contestable from Owen Farrell.
Everyone makes errors, like, though. He's a fabulous player.
But he's a fabulous player. But like, I think that just gives you a kind of an illustration of just how perfect Hugo Keenan is most of the time, that he probably takes that and doesn't knock it on. Whereas a young guy coming in, although he's not that young, actually, now that I think about it, he will make a few mistakes. But the reason why Hugo Keenan is so good is that when he makes a mistake, people are like, they're doing that kind of cartoon, like kind of like, what? You did what? But yeah, I think that just gives an illustration how good Hugo Keenan is. I just hope he's okay after that rugby incident, which I've been vindicated on, that collision. But yeah, no, I think that it's, I think that Irish back three, as well balanced as any back three anywhere in the game, I think.
Would you like a fun fact about another
ex-player? I love fun facts about ex-players.
Now, this isn't my fact. I read it earlier, but I'm going to pass it off as my fact because it comes from, just edit
this bit out.
Yeah. So this is 100% my fact. Okay. So the only hooker to make a break, to make a line break in this tournament was who?
Josh van der Fleer.
Ah, oh, very good. I see what you did there. It's because he threw into the lineout. That's how he got that.
Was this Big Dan Sheehan?
It was Big Dan Sheehan. And do you know how many he made?
Did he make? I'm going to do the scene where a ridiculously high number. So that you're just
40. Going, oh, well.
40? Yeah. 400 line breaks. You're just like, no, it was like 8. It was like, oh, well, I guess that's okay. I guess that's cool.
So he was the only hooker to make a line break, but he made 5. Not only that, but he beat as many defenders as every other hooker combined in just 183 minutes.
Dan Sheehan is a bit of a freak.
Dan Sheehan is a winger with a 2 on his back. That's it.
Like, it shouldn't work. Him being 6'3 as a hooker shouldn't work. But there he is, working away.
There you go. There's a nice fact about Dan Sheehan for you. Fabulous player.
Fabulous player. One of the things I was going to talk about in this is this seemed like I'm almost going to call it a boring Grand Slam. Because if you look back at the previous two in sort of, we'll call it in modern times, 2009, you had the game in Cardiff where you had the Roger drop goal and you had Stephen Jones with the missed penalty kick to win it. And then you go back to 2018 and you had Johnny Sexton's drop goal to beat France with the last kick of the game. This one, in comparison, was just they won. Their defense held solid. They scored a couple more points than the rest of the other teams. And it just tipped along. There was no sort of big defining moment in it.
There's an element of bland game. Excellence about it.
The Scotland game for me is probably the biggest, and I'm not putting it on par with like drop goals to win it, etc. But just the shit they had to deal with to get over the line in that Scotland game, but still got it done.
Certainly more tougher than a bus being laid. Anyway, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
But there's no single moment. But I think you can refer to even in the Scotland game, like there's the injuries. And
no,
the
yeah, I know what you're saying. There's no one singular moment that encapsulates the Grand Slam. Almost,
it's if a bit I, like,
yeah.
I'm like, this may come as a bit of a surprise to both you and the people who are listening to this podcast. I'm a Munster fan, So the, like, I'm used to things being the hard way, right? Even when things go well, it's done the hard way. Like, Ireland haven't done that in this Six Nations, which means it's kind of difficult for me to kind of click into gear with it. If that makes sense.
You mean you're just going to go out and just win the game?
You mean it's going to be fairly routine for all of those games?
No, not buying it.
Don't know about that. If
I had to pick a moment of the Six Nations, like my favorite moment, I think it would be Doris's pass to Ringrose against France while being tackled by Fiku.
Yes.
And he did a skip two to Ringrose on the wing, who left three players on the ground to score. That's probably up there with my favorite moment, I'd say. That, or when Ryan Baird pushed Finn Russell and Finn Russell got a penalty and it was like, oh, come on. Get up, Finn.
He barely get up. My favorite moment was when Andrew Porter was during the anthems at the game against England. Raw testosterone running down his face with the sheer emotion of Aron Aveen and Ireland's call. That's my favorite part.
My favorite moment is still the Italians shithousery with the Ireland call. Just
that still genuinely is funny. Like, you should actually, at the start, you should slow down the state of mind in
peace.
It's more than enough that I already include it, to be honest with you. That's enough editing without having to. No, I might do it at the end, but no,
it's
especially not tonight.
You'll be lucky if you even hit save on the file tonight. You'd be lucky
if this gets uploaded. We are winning.
But yeah, yeah. It's just like, I don't know. Like, I like all the technical stuff. Like the technical stuff, so I do. But it's, for me, it's always the stuff that's the fucking emotional stuff that kind of catches me. That's the thing that it make me feel something like. So when I saw Andrew Porter, fucking raw testosterone streaming down his face, I was like, I get it. I get it, Andrew. I get it.
I thought it was I have another really favorite moment, and it's probably because I've gone soft in my old age, but it's the fact that all the families were at the captain's run. I can't imagine how proud you must be to be in the stand watching, like, your brother or your dad or your husband or whatever, just running through that captain. Like, I can't imagine how nice that must be. Like, so yeah, I've gone very soft in my old age. Like, I can't look at nice, you know, parent moments and stuff. Like, we were driving to a match there a couple of weeks ago down in Railway, and we were driving Ballymount Strand or Sandymount. Mm-hmm. I always get them mixed up. But there was obviously parents watching their child kind of walk towards them for nearly one. I nearly crashed a car for crying. Like, I was like, I was ribbons. Like, I've got you. So when I saw the captain's run that they brought all the families in, I was like, that's so nice.
So I was there, like, during the anthems, right? I was sitting down, so my daughter was there, and it was going through my head. It was like, imagine, because I heard Ken and Dara saying that he knows where his parents are sitting or standing during the anthems, so he'd be looking at them. Then I was looking down at my daughter, and I'm kind of getting a little bit tingly even thinking about this now. Like, imagine that was you who was there, and you were standing over the anthem and looking at me in the stand. How emotional would I be then? And I'm like, I'm getting emotional about that now. It's like, what the fuck is going on here? I'm turning into a complete fucking sap in my old age.
Welcome to my world.
Welcome to the Three Sap podcast.
Well, it's two saps and a child fighting ring leader.
Saps and a fucking...
Yeah.
Owen's looking at us. He's like, you soft fuck.
You soft fuckers.
Oh, wait until you see your child
perfectly thrown up.
Look at you. Wait until your child. First match can be, be a tag team event. Take out all comers.
Overall,
so that was me on Saturday.
We said 6-7 weeks ago, or whatever it was, 7-8 weeks ago, Grand Slam. That's it. Like, nothing less would do.
Oh, 100%. And they lived up to it.
Here we are. Vindication.
Without question. Without question. Like that expectation 100% was on that team. And I know people were trying to fucking play it off like, oh, well, no, it would be okay if they didn't. Look, 100%. They needed to win that slam. They had to win that slam. And they did. And they lived up to it. And they did it.
They did it well.
They did it well. And like, I think they won the Slam the day they beat France, and they managed not to lose it for the following two games. But that's a very good side. A very, very good side. And they should go on and win a World Cup now. There's no reason why they shouldn't.
I was looking at it, and I was trying to figure out World Cup squads and things like that and who's there. Without getting into it too much, I think probably 30 out of the 33 are pretty much guaranteed now at this spot, barring injury. And I think the chance of a bolter coming from outside the group that trains in the High Performance Center is absolutely minimal at the moment. You have to be, as we've talked about, in the system, know the places.
I think it could be, it has to be a freak.
New Zealand or somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, it have to be a freak, both a series of injuries to open up the space, and then a serious bunch of performances between now and the end of the season to get into the conversation. Even then, I don't think that, like, I can't see it happening. There's a couple of guys who I could see outside that Ireland Leinster pipeline making their way in, but
it would have to be every game in Europe, rocking every game in Europe.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that even counts too much. I still think that Farrell will go for guys who have proven themselves on the tour to New Zealand, the Autumn Internationals, and the Six Nations, not necessarily the games themselves, but in the wider squads that have been training within that.
And yeah, I think, to get, like, because like there's guys who might not necessarily have played a ton of rugby in this year's tournament, but who, from what I've heard, have played a big role in camp, which will stand to them. But I think if there's one or two guys coming with injuries, and it's going to happen inevitably towards the end of the season, there'll be guys who won't make it, who everybody thought would be cast iron certain. They miss out through injury. There will be space for guys to pop in, and they will keep their eye out, because I think that what they can't have is, because I think at the moment Ireland have a squad of 26 guys that they know for certain they can plug in on a match day and they'll beat anybody in the world with a fair bounce, right? But I think that if that group starts to, there's some guys start dropping out through injury. We've already had a few guys who were injured. You know, like Sexton is out injured now. And like, again, at his age, like those injuries, it's medium term ones can turn into long term. So like, I think there's room there, but any bolters, I don't know, like they have a long journey ahead of them to even get into the warm up squads just to see. But it's possible, but I think it's very, very difficult to see. Outside of maybe one or two.
Well, and just when you're talking about that, you mentioned there, you know, guys who maybe haven't played a lot of rugby that, you know, may go to the World Cup. Keith Earls is going to go to the World Cup. I have no idea whether he'll be in the 33-man squad, but I would put serious money he will be with the group going to the World Cup. Whether Farrell
I think if he's
a player or sort of something to do with the background staff.
He could go, I would say. I think what he brings to the backfield for Ireland, even when he's not playing, I think he adds a ton to that group. But yeah, like there's some guys there. Like, it's going to be a nervy couple of months when it comes to the World Cup, because there's lots of high intensity rugby coming up in the, you know, provincially Europe.
All you need is one tackle
at this stage, like
the David Wallace effect.
All you need is one tackle.
A 3 to 4 month injury at this point puts you in serious doubt, and we know the frequency of those.
Yeah,
it's going to be it's going to be nerve wracking from that perspective.
Exactly. Right, we'll move on then from Ireland. We're back to the normal URC weekends, which is good to see. Kicking off Friday night, Leinster against the Stormers, first against second. Leinster missing their Grand Slam players. Stormers have their box
still out in the lash.
All around Gary Ringrose's house.
Yeah.
Josh Van der Fleer is just running.
Just running, just doing weights, just trying to keep sharp, you know. He took one day off, and he'll feel guilty about it for the rest of the year.
I heard he had a Mars bar, and he hasn't stopped running since.
I remember he probably says to the SNC guys, it's like, sorry, there was nougat in something I ate.
Look at us here, just taking the piss out of the best player in the world for being so dedicated.
Yeah.
Not like us, two of us who almost didn't bother showing up today.
I thought twice, I won't lie.
You can still phone it in. The Stormers have never won in Ireland so far, is the stat that I've seen on this. They have their box back. Leinster are without their Grand Slam players, and it looks like Sexton is out long-term injury.
Yeah.
Not sure whether he'd be back before the end of the season or not at this point, I think, is the latest update I'd heard on that.
Well, there's a few rumours going around that he's quite hurt after the Six Nations, that, you know, the injury to force him off there towards the end. And I suppose the worry is that, like, that goes long-term, you know, and turns into something that isn't easily recovered from. But yeah, there's lots of those guys, like, you know, Porter, Sheehan, Kelleher is injured as well. Doris, yeah. I think, has a hitch. I think himself and Keenan, and they're going through return to play protocols.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's going to be not Leinster's second team, but a bunch of guys who aren't in the Irish consideration are going to be coming in. This is the thing with Leinster. Like, they obviously have a ton of guys involved at test level, but the attrition rate that they'll go through for their top guys is becoming an issue for them.
Say that again.
The attrition rate for their top guys, for the likes of, you know, for Porter, for Sheehan, guys who have a lot of rugby under their belts, you know, like, and the Six Nations, as tough as it is, like, they've been quite good at adapting, you know, when those guys are coming in. But like, that Ulster game is coming up pretty soon, and if those guys aren't fully raring to go, I mean, Ulster will fancy their chances anyway. But that's something I think we look at for the Springboks or for France, if you've got a big representation away with England or France or whatever else, that it costs you when you go back to your club, because you're obviously you're drained, whatever else. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle it this time, because there's more guys who seem to have picked up knocks in the Six Nations this time around.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because not this weekend, but next weekend, Benetton face Connacht. Whereas an awful lot of Connacht guys have, you know, had the last few weeks off, whereas an awful lot of Benetton guys have been up with Italy. So suddenly you're going into that game with a Benetton team who are probably quite tired versus a Connacht team who, bar Beelham, Aki and Hansen, are essentially fresh, ready to go, had a good block of weeks, had a nice holiday. And I know I'm looking way ahead here.
Yeah.
But it's something that came into my mind there yesterday. Like, Benetton would be a sticky game, fully fit, ready to go. But you're looking at that now and you're kind of thinking to yourself, well, Connacht are at home now this weekend. Then they're at home against Benetton. No, they're away to Benetton, sorry, because of that Newcastle game. But they'll be relatively fresh, and they can almost, I don't want to say use this weekend as a tune-up, because that's not, like, Edinburgh would be tough, like, but as in you're getting back to match sharpness, whereas a lot of Benetton players will be coming off the back of a very demanding Six Nations.
That in itself is like the downside of a ton of representation at test level, I suppose, that Leinster have avoided, I think, so far over the last number of years, when the representation has been high. But I think it's at a peak, I think, over the last number of years, or like this year compared to the last number of years. And like, it does make it difficult. I think we've seen that with, you know, teams like Saracens have often, I think, remember the year when Leinster won? I think, like, in Europe 2018. Like, Leinster, or Saracens rather, had a couple of injuries they picked up, and a couple of guys were off a long, like, international campaign, and they just looked off. That's the worry, I suppose, if you're like a Leinster fan, guys coming back and not being fully on it, or taking a while to get back up to speed, or coming in with a few knocks, more knocks than anybody, you know, most players are playing with knocks these days, but like a few more than normal, and that in itself has an effect. Like, it's the downside of it. They've managed to avoid it, I will say that, over the last number of years. But there just seems like a lot of knocks and injuries this time around, you know, to the likes of, you know, Doris, Keenan. Sheehan had a shoulder injury. He didn't look like he was 100% either against England. How it plays out, and especially with the Stormers coming up.
Well, I think if you go back, like, if you go back years on this, as you said, there wasn't the representation there, but also the league wasn't strong as it is now. You didn't have the South African teams. You didn't have that they could still get away with putting out weaker teams and winning and sort of holding resting people back. I think now you're looking at, once you start getting into the playoffs anywhere, there's teams there that can hurt you. They saw with the Bulls coming up even last year that they were able to do it, you know? So I think those days are necessarily gone. I think you've increased the representation within the Ireland team. That's just a factor of the pathways. And we've talked about this before. If you only have one pathway defined in there and the rest are ancillary to it and are just providing minimal percentage points coming into it, that's going to happen. You pick up a couple of injuries and that could be the end of your season.
I think as well, like, every player only has so much rugby in them for a calendar year. And like, this was a case of Munster, I remember. This used to be an opinion I would hold in the late 2000s, right? So I'm just going to go back in time for this one, that the Munster guys would come back from the Six Nations and look out of it, especially kind of towards the latter end of the 2000s.
2007, they lost the
quarterfinal. They looked like wrecked at times.
They were destroyed after the Six Nations.
Yeah, and same after 2009. Guy, 2010, there was a lot of representation still there at that point. And it just started to, you could see the rugby starting to collect, you know, week to week. That's like, that will be a concern, I think, for Leinster.
I love how there will be Leinster fans listening to this wondering how we said, so Leinster Stormers the weekend, and now we're talking about Munster's quarterfinal exit to Clonelly
16
years ago. What is this podcast?
Yeah, no, but like, for Leinster this week, I suppose, to get it back on track.
Back on track? They haven't lost a game yet.
The podcast back on track.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
I think the Stormers are looking, that they're talking about bringing all their box, like we said earlier, like a massive challenge. How do you see it going? The actual game itself. We know what the Stormers bring. Like, I saw them in person last season, and they were one of the best teams I saw in Thomond Park. Like, they were a very good side, obviously, because, you know, they won the URC, but they're a very, very good side.
I think it'll be a very sticky game, but Leinster will approach this all guns blazing as best they can, because they win this. That tour to South Africa is now, I don't want to say moot, because it's, I don't mean to, for it to be sounding insulting or anything, but they're guaranteed home advantage in a final if they just win this weekend. So, I mean,
it becomes a development tour. Yeah,
it does, essentially. And you get to give guys a chance. And again, they'll obviously be looking for a win in South Africa. I'm not saying they wouldn't, but it just means that, like, as we said there, in regards, how would you say, the load that's on your top players at the moment, it just significantly lessens that as well. Because you're saying, okay, there's a 2 week period where we can just really manage that training load rather than have to worry about a game in South Africa or something like that. So I think it'll be a very sticky game. To be honest with you, I just see Leinster coming out on top because they haven't lost a game yet this season. And going against them now is just a bit like, well, where's the base there? And I know the Stormers will have their Springboks back, but Leinster will still have a very strong team and will back themselves to do it. I think if you're an Ulster fan, you're also looking at Leinster and you're thinking, please, please do it. Because, like, I mean, Stormers are second in 59 points, Ulster are third in 54. If Ulster get it and Leinster both get a win this weekend, I mean, it puts Ulster just 1 point behind second for a home semi-final if they get that far. You know, if they get a bonus point win against the Bulls, which I think is possible, and we'll get to that in a little while, and Leinster win, it puts them even on points. I think it even could put them ahead on points difference. I'm not too sure, but you know, it's given that period of 6-7 weeks that Ulster had where everyone was like, geez, what's going on? They're still in a position to finish second in the URC, which is wild. So yeah, I think it'll be a heavy game for Leinster, but I think they'll get it done just because they've gotten every other game up to now won as well, to be honest.
I think tactically it could be an interesting game, the way it'll go. Both like strike plays, both like sort of their moves off set piece.
Yeah, I hope there's about 49 5-meter penalties in the game.
And also,
both,
if you look,
and both lineout options are for some reason just getting a little bit of treatment, so they can't join the lineout. So they're like, you know what, we just have 49 5 meter tap and goes.
It's what the fans want.
It is. Yeah. Like, let's be honest.
Well, the other thing is, like, you know, Leinster like to hold possession of the play of the ball, keep going through the phases. Stormers seem almost happy without the ball at times. They're happy enough to defend in the right areas of the pitch and then go with the strike moves from their players and transition. I still think Leinster are probably in this.
Is Roos fit for the Stormers? Evan Roos, is he fit or is he injured?
I don't know.
If he is fit, I don't know. I don't see Doris playing in this game, let's be honest.
No, he's not. No.
It'll be in, I don't know if Conan Deegan. Would. Yeah,
it'll be Deegan, Penny.
That's what I mean.
If Deegan, Penny and Ruddock.
It is Deegan, Conan having signed a new contract there today or yesterday by the time you're listening to this, Deegan probably third choice eight now up against Evan Roos. That's a huge battle to have as well. If Roos is fit, I don't know if he is or not.
But yeah.
And again, recording this podcast without any team sheets is a pain in the hole.
It's a pain in the hole. Yeah, it is.
Here we are.
We could do a kind of a Friday podcast where we have the team sheets, but
do you know everything we said yesterday? Ignore it.
Ignore all that. Forget it. Forget about it. But yeah, no, I think for Leinster, like, it'll be very close, I think, again. I just think that Stormers they match up really well in certain areas with Leinster. That I think that if the right conditions exist, that they can win this game. I think that they have a very good scrum. Defensively, they're very good. I think that they can score tries off line-out position as well. They're also pretty patient and I think accurate with their kicking game. I think they'll understand how to beat this Leinster team. And I think that man for man, they should have more quality, I think. Depending on their selection, of course, which could be, you know, completely different. But yeah, no, I think that the Stormers, with the right approach, can win this game. I think they will. I think it'll be very, very close, though.
Two for Leinster, one for the Stormers, then. And the other news from Leinster today is Jack Conan, Jamie Osborne, and Ross Byrne all signed new contracts.
Do you know what I'm really interested in?
Contract length.
I am really interested to find out, because Ross Byrne signed a new contract last year, right, in March 2022, and he signed another one this year. Did he sign a one-year deal last year? And then he's re-upping it with a different term contract this year, we don't know. Or did he sign a multi-year contract last year, like 2 years, and he is re-upping it now on better terms after his performances for Ireland? And given the fact that he's going to be the number one guy at Leinster once Sexton retires, as it currently stands.
I think he's going to be the number one guy at Leinster for a lot of the rest of the season.
Yeah. I think he will. I'd be surprised if we see too much of Sexton at all for Leinster this year. But that's what I'm interested in. I won't find out. No one's going to tell me.
We'll never know.
But that's what I'm interested in, to see if that's a reflection of his step up this year, which I think he has stepped up this year performance wise. Or was it the fact that he was like 1 year deal last year to this year? We'll see where we are heading up to the World Cup, and now he's re-signed. I think that'd be an interesting thing to know.
it'll also be interesting to see where things come out in terms of the depth chart at 10 for Leinster for next season. Sexton drops off.
They don't have that much depth. They only have Sexton, Ross Byrne, Harry Byrne, Kieran Frawley, Charlie Tector, Sam Prendergast. I'm being sarcastic, by the way.
Like,
Jimmy O'Brien.
What if four of them got injured?
Both of you were looking at me, and I was like, I don't know if they know I'm joking here or not.
I was having a conversation about that the other day about like the depth that's there, and like, I have a thing where I like to see young tens getting as much game time as possible. I think that the higher level you can expose these guys to, the more pictures you can get them to experience on field, I think the better they become.
I agree. And I think with second rows, front rows, it's not the same back rows you get away with, but I'd like to see nines and tens playing as often as, you know, allowed, obviously.
And midfielders, I'd pull back a little bit as well, just because of the physical demands of that. wingers, I think you can throw in Young to a certain extent too. But like, I think with a, like I said, there with front rows or second rows, leave them off, give them a bit of time. But with tens, I think these guys, you need to get them as much, as many looks as possible at the highest level to kind of just bed them in and get them, you know, get them making those equations, you know?
Getting pictures, yeah.
Make those equations. And I'm not sure how Leinster managed that next season with Frawley, with Harry Byrne, with Charlie Tector and Sam Prendergast. I know they'll have an internal pecking order that guys will have, but like there's going to be a good player there or a potentially good player
just
not to, getting the minutes.
Just to drop in, I suppose, I don't know, what's the word? I don't want to say realization, but just to make it very clear when it comes to Frawley at Leinster, he has as many starts at fullback for Leinster this season as he does at out half for Leinster in the last three seasons.
Yes, yeah, no, that is true. I think that there's an element of a nod to that as well, where Leinster are like using him in nearly every position except 10.
Yeah, loosehead prop next week.
But like, I think with, you know, and I think this is
practicing his throwing with
get the throwing with Josh, working out. Josh sees him eating a Mars bar and is just like,
no,
put that fucking thing down.
He wouldn't say that.
I'm swearing.
He wouldn't swear.
Yes, I'm swearing.
He'd say like flipping.
Put that flipping Mars bar down right now.
There you go. That flaming.
Put it down.
That ruddy.
I've just realized Josh Van der Fleer is the rugby equivalent of Ted Lasso.
I've never seen it, so I don't know.
He's like a hyper-athletic Ned Flanders. He's just like, imagine being the best rugby player in the world. And you're just like the nicest man that anybody has ever met.
But well, I look at like, we're not going down this rabbit hole again.
But on the 10 thing, like I just think that's something for, it's a good place to be in. Like I think you look at Munster, like a couple of, and I know I'm bringing this back to Munster again, but like just very quickly,
you look at Munster in 2001.
You look at 1999. You look at Jeremy Staunton, Ronan O'Gara. but if you look at like the equation that Munster had a few years ago, where they had Carberry and Blaindall were injured, JJ Hanrahan, who was the kind of the main senior guy, Ben Healy and Jack Crowley, they didn't offer a contract to JJ Hanrahan to get those minutes into Ben Healy and the younger players to move them up a little bit. I don't think that'll happen at Leinster, because Leinster tend not to do that.
You look at Ulster and you could have as many tens as you want and they'll all sit there watching Billy Burns.
Yep.
Sorry, Billy, you wouldn't tell me what pictures you saw during that game, would you? Just so I can...
No, could you draw them for me?
Draw me a picture there of what you saw.
Yeah, just get it. I've got a flip book here. Just try to illustrate it as realistically as you can, Billy.
What game is next? How are we still on this podcast?
Why do people listen?
I want to go to bed. Come on.
It's Connacht against Edinburgh, 8th against 12th, Saturday at 3 p.m. Connacht have won their past four games.
Is that home or away?
It's home.
Home. Connacht win.
Next.
Edinburgh have only one win in their last eight URC games, which was against Zebra.
Connacht are in a good place here as well. Who are Sharks playing? I don't know what that was. It wasn't me. I know that much.
That was me.
But, oh, sorry. Why am I saying sorry? I didn't do anything.
Sharks are away to the Scarlets.
So Sharks away to Scarlets. If Scarlets manage to win that, right, and Connacht win, they leapfrog into seventh. And again, if Ulster beat the Bulls and Connacht win well, they could actually push themselves to sixth maybe. So it's a very interesting place for Connacht to be in. I think you're going to have to finish top seven this year.
Oh, you have to.
This is a big bite of the cherry for Connacht to jump up a couple of spots and to, not saying get breathing room, because it's like in there, that kind of sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, like there's 9 points between them. Like it's still very, very tight there, from the Bulls down as far as Cardiff. But it's a big chance for Connacht just to put a bit of space in there, you know?
The only thing I think potentially going against Connacht for this is Carty is 50-50.
Yeah. Play. Yeah. He's yeah, like, think, that's a big factor.
That's his Hawkshaw, I think, would be the replacement there for them. So they should still be relatively fresh coming out of unimpacted from the Six Nations. There'd be the Beelum might be available. Did he?
No, he, I thought he was. He I to, thought he was proper injured, wasn't he? For
is it? Oh, sorry. He went off with the knee. So it's Aki and Hansen himself are out. So yeah,
I'm going to find Mac Hansen on a trawler somewhere in 3 or 4 weeks.
Hansen goes on a beer, he just brings his wallet and a passport because he doesn't know where the fuck
and
he's
a phone going. Charger. Yeah.
No, I think Connacht
that's not how it works. Mac Hansen's just going to rock in and be like, that's my jersey, yeah?
Sorry,
like,
I'm starting in this, yeah?
They'd be like, that's a rest week, Matt. And Mac, and he'd be like, nah, not for me. Maybe for you. Maybe you go like, have a rest.
The room gets very quiet and he's just like, no, Andy.
Guys, why are you making this awkward? Just give me the jersey.
I'm starting this one, right? Right?
No. He's going to be told he can't play due to IR a few minutes and he's going to go into the referee's room and take his jersey.
But how depleted are Connacht due to the Six Nations in comparison to Edinburgh?
Well, they're missing a few key difference makers like Finlay Beelum. What's the prognosis on his injury, actually?
He said something not long ago, but in the keeping up with this podcast, I can't remember what he said exactly. So
I think I remember seeing him walking around with something like Robocop would have on his leg.
It's a while. It is a while.
But you've got him, you've got like Carty is a doubt. They're without Aki, but they've been without him for a while. Hansen as well. It'll be tough, but I think that like Connacht at home, Edinburgh have been very up and down. Like Connacht should win this,
Yeah.
I think they will, yeah.
I think that's fair enough. Moving on then to the other news then from that is Paul Boyle signed a new contract this week for Connacht, extended that out. I think it was only a 1 year extension.
I think it was 1 year. Yeah, one year.
They fucked up their Twitter video that they did to announce it.
Did they?
Yeah, the video, because they were doing it like a Lord of the Rings thing, right? But like they kind of fucked it up because like they had it as that bit in Lord of the Rings where Gandalf comes back as Gandalf the White rather than, you know, because he had been Gandalf the Grey. They should have used the bit when he was coming out of the top of Helm's Deep. Then it would have made sense.
The only bit of Lord of the Rings that sticks in my head, now I know the whole premise about destroying the ring and stuff, but it's when one of the bad guys at the end, I don't know the name of them, he said, looks like meat's back on the menu. When would he have ever seen a menu? How does he know what that is?
What menu did those guys have when they were being literally born out of the ground?
Yeah, they were being made, weren't they? For want of a better word. And he said that, and I was like,
looks like meat's back in the menu. And just like, wait a minute, how do you know what a menu is?
Your vocabulary extends you.
Hang on. Why
are you down here with the foot soldiers? Get up there with management.
Are you a man dressed as an orc? Is this a movie? What's going on? This isn't a documentary.
I've never seen the movies. Never seen anything. Never seen a minute of it.
I was in college when Avatar came out. You were probably both 50, but I was in
college. I was halfway through my second ruined life at that point.
That was unnecessary. Sorry. But I was in college when that came out, and I remember I went to see it and I came home. And a fellow I lived with, Gus, he goes, what did you think of it? And honest to God, like I wasn't messing. I went, yeah, it was good. Like, but it was so unrealistic. And he was like, that's what you think of the movie. The planet of blue people was unrealistic. And I was like, oh yeah, actually, when I went with it.
I felt I could have grounded it in reality, you know, like had the Navi should have had a job.
That's what I said. It was unrealistic. Well done, Jeff.
Where are they getting the money from?
Clearly the movie went over my head.
I felt the movie that was set in outer space where human beings were able to transport themselves into the bodies and minds of these 8-foot-tall giant blue sexy cats. It was a little bit unrealistic for my taste.
Dear Mr. Spielberg.
Oh, God.
Ulster Bulls?
Munster Glasgow.
Munster Glasgow.
Brilliant.
This will be hot, hot.
Spicy.
Fifth against fourth. Munster have won their last five URC games. And Glasgow have only lost once in all competitions since November, which was away to the Lions in South Africa. But Glasgow haven't won
the biggest challenge in this game is me being on the radio for it and not having, and I can't swear for 2 hours.
And that, I think, challenge, in fairness, like, does get bigger when it's Munster Glasgow, which is one of the most feisty games.
Yeah.
It's so spicy. There's always
niggle in this.
Always.
There's always spite. It's Spite Bowl 2023. That's what this game is. Like,
and especially Glasgow, both are fighting for, you know, fourth at the moment.
Like, if Munster were to win this game, it's huge for Munster season. Just as like it is for Glasgow. There is massive amounts of writing on this.
Do you know what's funny? And I was talking about this in a podcast last night. I often have to remind myself that this is year one of a Munster rebuild.
I know. It's weird, isn't it?
Like, if they beat Glasgow this weekend, they go to fourth in the URC. And you consider at the start of the season, this same season that lost to Dragons, this is the same season. And I often have to say to myself, this is year one of a rebuild.
It feels like two seasons in one.
Yeah, it's so weird. I don't know how to describe it, but like, it feels like Roundtree's been in charge for a lot longer than 10 months.
It does.
9 months. It's very, very weird in that regard.
I think in Munster season, it's split into two. There's pre-autumn internationals and post-autumn internationals.
Like pre-Porky Grieve, post-Porky Grieve.
Yeah. They are very, very different times.
Like, the thrilling thing about this game is that Munster might have more than two fit second rows for it.
Yeah.
Which is remarkable.
I don't know. I'm raging. I thought I'd get the call up this week. I've been working on my growth.
Yeah. I've been trying to add height over the last couple of decades. And, yeah, no, I haven't been rewarded with a call.
What I did was, I've called Roundtree every week, but what I did was I angled my camera differently. So I was reaching the top of the screen more.
I'll do it as well, look, see, like this here.
Sorry, I was pressing a button there. So I just angled it down. I know this is a non-visual podcast, but I was just like, just angling it down. So suddenly all you could see was my chest. And he was like, Jeff. Yeah, I can't see it. And I'm like, oh, sorry, I've just gotten so tall.
Sorry, just the camera won't. I'm trying to...
Yeah, sorry, I'll just duck down here.
I'm trying to get into the camera lens here.
Owen is here, so unhappy with what we are doing right now.
Because it means nothing to anyone else.
Let me just bend down here. Let me just bend down here. Let me just bend down here and try and
get it.
And then I started moving closer to Jeff, so I was getting wider as well. And I was
get in there, Jeff. Start bending
bulking,
down.
Just bulking.
I'm going to take a screen grab here.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
I get back. We can get a reference here. I'm just trying to get in all the lads here because we're very incredibly tall human beings. There we go. That'll play well on social.
What I've been working on is I've been working on bulking up.
Oh, good.
Unfortunately, yeah.
You're not screaming at me and Tom. We do shit like this.
Oh, if only you could throw coffee through a screen at this point.
They'll invent a technology that'll do that at some point. There'll be just a spray of coffee coming out here whenever we're unfocused.
I've been working on bulking up, and I've reached to the point now on the BMI scale where apparently if I'm a good 7 inches taller, I'm right on the mark.
You're right on the thing. I'm trying to add height, but it's actually just, it's not going up, it's going out.
Yeah, going out.
that's my main problem.
Would the likes of Craig Casey be back for this game? Or would he still be right? He would be,
He's back for this game.
Yeah.
And I know that because he was on presser during the week. The most bizarre presser that I have ever heard.
Oh, I love these stories.
There was a reporter.
This is going to be a two-hour episode.
This is going to be very quick. There was a reporter on there. He works at the Star. This is the same guy. I told the story before about how he was asking a question to Graham Rowntree of all people, and a cat walked across the camera, right? This was on a Zoom call or a Teams call, and he caught the cat and threw the cat over his shoulder, right? And then just continued asking the question like he didn't do anything. So he was on in this presser, and he was asking Craig Casey, Craig, just how brave, could you tell me how brave Ben Finlay is? Could you tell me how brave he is? And Craig Casey's like, looking at him kind of going, Ben Healy? He's just like, yeah, Ben Healy. How brave is he to go and make that move to Scotland? How brave is that? Trying to get a soundbite out of him. And then he was talking about, like, you know, I used to play 10 for Rockwell. It's like, this is fucking bizarre. I hope Craig's head is all right after this, because like I got a concussion listening to this. So I hope he's okay. But like, as in, you look at the week ahead, like Craig will start this, I think. And yeah. Gavin Coombs will be involved, I think. And Jack Crowley could also be involved. So I think Munster will go all out for this with the guys who they have available.
Second row, who do you think? Does Snyman start?
Oh, I don't think he's... I don't think he's... Does he?
I think Klein starts, because... He essentially starts every game ever.
You have Ahern is back. Adogbo is back. Adogbo looking fucking massive, by the way. Colossal. This guy is looking in training. Absolutely huge. He was standing next to Shane McCarthy, right? He was a big guy, like a big winger. He's in the academy. He's training with the academy for the end of the season. He's 6'3". Like, Edwin Adogbo was standing next to him and looked like your man's big giant father was next to him. The size of Edwin Adogbo is looking colossal. I'm not sure if he'll be involved, but Munster have a choice of second rows who are fit and available. They can pick more than two. So, like, you've got John Klein, but you could also pick four other guys who are also now fit. I don't know. Like, I think we'll see Snyman on the bench for the time being, I would think.
Who are we going for? Glasgow or Munster win?
Munster.
I'm going to go Munster anyway, but I don't know how badly Glasgow will be impacted from the Six Nations.
Tui Pilato and Jones, I would say, guys who played a lot of minutes for them. But they'll still be tricky, because they're a very good side, very well coached. Franco Smith doing a great job there.
I'm going with Munster, because I said I would, so I still am.
Okay. Moving on then, Saturday evening, Ulster against Bulls, third against sixth.
Ulster.
Okay.
Ulster, they're going well. They've only one loss in the last five games. Seven games they've played against South African sides in Belfast, and they've won all seven. Bulls have only won two away games this season. One was Dragons and the other one was Benetton. I'm going with Ulster all day. And they're not too impacted.
No, and I think as well, this game is going to be, the collisions of this game are going to be making the teeth fall out of your head. Because these are two teams that like to rock and roll off nine. And that's going to be immensely physical. But I think that Ulster at home should have more about them. Bulls have been very up and down this year. Yeah, I think Ulster should win this.
I hope to see a bit more Harry Sheridan. He's looked good in any of the games that he's come on. And I think with Henderson out, he maybe has a chance to fill in there somewhere in that. I think they'll need physicality in that.
What are these rumours about Ian Henderson?
To be honest with you, it sounds like, agent talk. He has an offer from the IRFU, Ulster or IRFU. I don't know whether it's Central.
It'll be there. I think he'll probably be still on the Central, I'd say.
Yeah. But now that that's on the table, he has an offer to play in Japan, supposedly, is the stories floating around in the press.
I don't know. Can you see it?
It reeks of, you know, the Miami Dolphins are in for me.
what would be the Ian Henderson equivalent? Oh, the the Milwaukee Bucks want me to play a small forward there next year.
Yeah,
they want to play with Giannis. But yeah, no, like on the one hand, look, it'll probably be a big bump in money, we assume. But again, then you're moving to Japan, which is not easy. You know, it's a big trip. You could say, look, he's achieved a lot at Ireland. So he'll go to the World Cup, obviously, if he's fit. I assume. Is he signed up to the World Cup or before the World Cup?
I don't know.
Yeah, but no, it's one of those things where, look, I think that it could happen, but I'd be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked. Maybe go to France, maybe. Japan would be a bit, I don't know, it's a bit out there. It could happen, but I would expect to see him re-sign with the RFU.
Yeah, I think the same. So we're on 3 for Ulster there. Then moving on to the Women's Six Nations, which kicks off this weekend. Ireland, their schedule is Wales away this weekend, then France at home, Italy away, England home, and then they finish off with Scotland away. No sevens players available to the squad for the tournament. They've made their decisions in terms of their picks for the squad overall, which don't necessarily marry up with the Interpro results and things like that. They seem to be basing it primarily on the AIL and how the central contracts were awarded out, which was how close and how cheap can you live to the M50. I'm not feeling overly confident about this tournament from an Ireland perspective. What do you guys think?
I've watched a lot of women's AIL this year. I've watched every single game, actually, that they've played. And there's some really good players involved here. Now, some of those won't be available because of sevens. But I think when you look at this Irish team, if the selection is right, they'll be competitive to the level that is possible. But I don't know. I think it's going to be a very, very difficult tournament. This is the start of something with Ireland. And I'm not sure what the level is with regards to, like, I think finishing third would be a massive achievement for this group. But not sure how feasible it is at the moment.
To be honest, I think finishing third would be incredible.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely incredible, because it would probably mean a win against Scotland, Italy and Wales. And to be honest, I'm just not seeing it at the moment. Now, in terms of prep and everything like that, you can say, yeah, there was a tour to Japan, and you can look at that Celtic Cup or that Celtic Challenge. But I mean, the tour to Japan started off so well. That second game did not go well. That Celtic Challenge, yeah, you know, Ireland won it, like, but you look at the opposition in that, and it was fairly poor. Like, you know, Ireland, the only team in this Six Nations that weren't at a World Cup. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of experience brought back from that. You look at France, who were a kick of the ball away from making a final. You look at England, who, Jesus, like, what a final. I know they lost it, like, but went on that run of games, etc. You have the coach leaving at the end of this Six Nations. So there's still that continuity from the World Cup. It's not like a changing of the guard, like in France or anything like that. I think it's going to be very difficult for Ireland to do well at all in this. Like, it's a very young team. They have 8 uncapped players. And, you know, from what we've seen in the past, it's, yeah, I don't know, like, and even in regards to team selections, like, it's you look at their last year against Scotland up in Ulster, the night before the captain's run, I believe, is when they found out who was in the 23. And it's Wednesday night now. They play Saturday. It's Wednesday night now. And from what I've heard, the players still don't know what 23 it is. So, I mean,
that's not ideal prep at all.
It's very hard to focus on a game when you don't know if you're going to even be involved, if you're going to be on the bench, if you're going to start.
How do you run combos?
But how do you like even visualize it as a player? Like, how can you look forward to it as a competition if, you know, 3 nights before it, you're like, oh, you know, your mom or dad texts you, or your partner texts you, and you say, oh, I actually don't know if I'm playing or not. Like, it's so difficult. Like, so I think, Tom, what you said there about finishing third, I'd be hugely surprised.
Cartwheels.
Yeah.
I'd be down the road if it finished third.
I'd be genuinely chuffed, because I mean, one of the games I think they'll target is that Scotland game. It's the last game of the tournament and they're away.
to Scotland in their last game of the tournament, but it comes after England at home, which is going to be a bit of a nightmare, like, to be honest. So
it's like England, outstanding team.
Oh, ridiculous, like. But yeah.
You almost said phenomenal again there.
I did. I genuinely, no, stop it. But like, it's like, you know, when you look at a Six Nations schedule, right? And you see France and England at home, and you automatically say to yourself, okay, you know, you've a better chance this year now than others. Still not the case.
No, like, not the case.
I don't think
no.
It'll be a case for a little while, like a couple of years, to be honest with you. If they finish third, I'd be amazed. I'd be properly, I don't think they'll get three wins, to be honest, against Wales, Scotland, and Italy. I think
Italy are very good, very physical.
Yeah, and I know they beat Italy last year, like, but I just don't see it happening at the moment. And I think if you're looking for a team to win it, in my eyes, it's going to be England. And I know France pushed them close, etc. In the World Cup and that. But I was just trying to get the details right in my head. France's last game is in fact away to England, so that plays kind of right into that narrative of, you know, if England want to win it, it's also a good opportunity, because it'll probably be a world record crowd as well, I reckon, in England.
Yeah.
Or a record crowd, sorry, I should say, in England. So, I mean, it'll be a big game against France to seal the deal, I think, for England. So it kind of plays into their hands well there. But I'm excited about the competition and I'm looking forward to watching it. But I'm finding it difficult to get excited for what I'm going to see from Ireland, if that sounds
right. Yeah, it's got the feel of a very, very difficult tournament coming up, where there's going to have to be a lot of bugs worked out.
And I think a lot of soul searching.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, moments where you're kind of sitting there and you're like, you know, I don't, like, we're just picking yourself up to go again kind of a thing. If that makes sense. I can't wait for it as a tournament. I think, you know, it's going to be a very good one. Even that first game for England, you know, Sarah Hunter is finishing up after that first game. You know, it's her last game for England. So, I mean, you're going to want to kick off the campaign well to say goodbye to England's most capped player of all time, regardless of team, like. And then afterwards, after a start like that, there's a little bit, I suppose there's a little sense, like, I know Marley Packer's co-captaining with Hunter in that game, but like, there's a little kind of bit of, I suppose, the passing of the guard there. England won't want to let that momentum slip, especially if that last game is against France. So, I mean, in my eyes anyway, 100% the team to beat in that tournament.
Perfect. We'll round it up there, folks. Thank you very much for listening to our ramblings and for supporting the podcast. Please do rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen, as it really helps. And also be sure to share the podcast on social media. I hope you have a good week, and the three of us will be back next week to chat again.